Most of you are aware that we have some new carpet in the adult education room and the library. That was partially paid for by gifts from the women's ministry and from a private donation from an individual within the church. So it did not come out of the budget. Every now and then somebody asks, well, how do we get things because they're not in the budget? Well, because some people are kind-hearted. We have a new piano that was a donation. The other piano is at Bethany Baptist Church right now. So we have the privilege of giving them, who did not have a piano, a nice piano, and we now have a bigger one. Because bigger is better, right? There we go. So in any case, we're in the midst of a sermon series on one anothering. We're going to set it aside for the week. I was thinking about a different topic this week to preach in January, and based upon the experience that I had Wednesday night in WOW with our adult class going through the book of Philippians, I decided to do this instead. Here's our passage for this morning. Paul, who is in prison, has a special relationship with the Philippian church. They've been extremely kind to him and supportive of him and encouraging of him. And while he's in prison, he thinks fondly of them. The letter is more a love letter than any of his other letters, which mostly talk about problems in other churches. As he gets to the end, he says this: "It is such a great joy for me that you have once again taken the opportunity to show how much you care. I don't mean that you've stopped caring for me, just that you have had no chance to show it. I am not saying this because I feel neglected, for I have learned to be satisfied with whatever I have and in whatever circumstance I find myself. I know what it is to be in need and what it is to have more than enough. I have learned this secret so that anywhere I am, at any time, I may be content, whether I am full or hungry, whether I have too much or too little. I have the strength to face all conditions by the power that Christ gives me. But it was very good of you to help me in my troubles." And thus ends the reading of God's word. Now hold that thought for a second. There was a guy who struggled with finding happiness in life. He couldn't find it at work professionally. He couldn't find it at home personally. Nowhere in life was he happy. He was driven by the desire to find happiness, and so he decided to enter the life of a monastery. Now, this monastery in which he joined himself had a commitment to hard labor and a life of deprivation and vows of silence. In fact, the rule was you could only say two words every 2 years and only to the abbot. I've told some of you this story before. I see you smiling. So when you speak with the abbot, you actually have to be working with the abbot. So you say your two words every 2 years while you're laboring with him. So at the end of 2 years, this guy comes in and the abbot explains the rules to him again. And he says, "My son, what would you like to say to me?" And he says, "Bed hard." "Thank you, my son." So he goes out and he labors for another 2 years and comes in and has the opportunity to say two more words. "My son, what would you like to say?" "Food bad." Two more years pass. He comes in. He says, "My son, what would you like to say to me?" "Work difficult." "Thank you, my son," he says. So finally, at the end of 8 years, he comes in and he says, "I quit." And the abbot says, "Well, I'm not surprised. All you've done since you've been here is complain." Okay, now, when most of us think of life and what we want our life to be like, we don't want it to be filled with hard beds and bad food and difficult work and unhappiness. The number one thing that all of us, if we're honest with ourselves, are looking for, by however means we search for it, to whatever degree we experience it, is happiness. Every single human being wants to be happy. Unfortunately, life is fickle, and happiness is a difficult target to shoot for. Happiness is something that arises from circumstances outside of ourselves, either positively or negatively. We're either happy or unhappy. While joy, the biblical concept that isn't quite happiness arises from within ourselves, and it's based upon contentment. Joy is the biblical term for this inner blessedness that arises from within with people who have learned to be at peace or content with whatever their circumstances are around them. This is what Jesus has in mind when in John chapter 16, verse 22, he says, "Your hearts will be filled with joy, the kind of joy that no one can take from you." Happiness is something which we keep getting taken from us, but joy is something that source cannot be destroyed. Now, happiness is a worldly term that comes from the word hap. Hap is an old English word which means chance. This is where happenstance comes from, or mishap, or hapless comes from. The idea is that either good luck or bad luck, or good fortune or bad fortune determines how we feel about life. Happiness, by definition, again, is dependent upon one's circumstances. How would this picture work if this woman was standing out in pouring rain? It wouldn't be quite as happy, would it? Unfortunately, that's what life does to us. It rains on us constantly. Happiness isn't listed by psychology as one of the five primordial drives in life. It's not listed by psychology as the eight seminal emotions that people experience in life. But modern American culture, in its commitment to comfort and convenience and ease and avoiding difficulty and doing what's best for me and what I want to do and fulfilling my desires and achieving my own personal goals that I've set for myself, however you want to say it, is all about happiness. It has to do with entertainment. It has to do with advertising. It has to do with relationships. You name it, any aspect of American life focuses on happiness or achieving happiness. This is where the biblical qualities of joy and contentment and peace come in. Joy and peace arise within a person who has learned to be content. And content means I don't have to have anything else to make me happy. I'm at peace where I am right now. So let me ask you a question this morning. Is that your normal state of mind? Are you normally content? Are you normally at peace? Are you normally filled with joy? Or is this something that's eluding you? Happiness isn't found by pursuing it. It is the byproduct of pursuing God and God's plan for our life. Now, the Bible speaks repeatedly of these deep inner longings that we have, the desire for joy, the desire for satisfaction, the desire for fulfillment. And the question that all of us have to answer for ourselves is, by what means am I pursuing it? How am I choosing to achieve those things that I want most in life? So first of all, if we want the wrong things in life, it doesn't matter what the means are, you're already in trouble. But if you're choosing to find the right thing by the wrong means, you can be in trouble as well. There is a highly regarded document in the 17th century called the Westminster Confession of Faith. It's the confession that our denomination, the EPC, uses. At the beginning of this document, it says, "For what purpose were human beings created?" And the answer it gives is to glorify and enjoy God forever. The word enjoy means to enter into the joy of something. And so this is why various scriptures, particularly the Psalms, talk about this. In Psalm 16:11, it says, "In your presence is the fullness of joy, and at your right hand are the only pleasures that are eternal." Look at that one again. "In your presence, O Lord, is the fullness of joy, and at your right hand are the only pleasures that are eternal." And then the ones that you know so well, as a deer pants for streams of water, "So my soul pants for you, O God." And in Psalm 63, "O God, you are my God, my soul thirsts for you, as if it were a dry and waterless land." So the question is, how do we go about seeking and experiencing joy in life? And the answer is by pursuing God is our first priority and trusting that in that relationship we will experience joy. Now, if we expect that happiness is going to come through us arranging our circumstances so that we have the greatest number of favorable circumstances, we are going to struggle in life. Because first of all, we cannot control our circumstances. A few of them we can, most of them we can't. And so because the world operates on its own and we walk through it without being able to control everything around us, enough things are going to hit us from time to time that happiness is going to be robbed from us. If we don't have an inner joy based upon contentment and peace, we're going to be miserable people indeed. Do you remember how Walter Cronkite used to close his daily news programs? And that's the way it is. Well, unfortunately, that's the way it is in life. Circumstances will not align so that we can be happy. The universe will not fall down and roll over for us. Even other people won't do everything we want them to think and say and do, and our life that's based upon having only good things happen to us is going to lead to a whole lot of disappointment and a whole lot of discouragement. You all remember King Solomon, who over 3,000 years ago said this exact same thing to us. This is a guy who was considered the best-looking man in his time, relatively speaking, the wealthiest person who ever lived. He was king of a mighty nation at the time. He was commander of a mighty army at the time. He was brilliant on top of everything else. And then God gave him wisdom to go with it all. And at the end of his life, after having everything that he wanted, he says in the book of Ecclesiastes, "I did not withhold anything from myself, anything that my heart desired, I allowed myself to have." And he gets to the end of his life and he says, "It is all foolishness. It is all vanity, because none of these things provide happiness." In fact, he summarizes it in this way at the very end of the book of Ecclesiastes. After everything has been said, this should summarize the matter for you. Have reverence for God and do what he tells you to do, because this is the purpose for which we were created. You all know that if we fly in the face of what God's intention in our life is, that we're not going to experience the joy and contentment and peace and satisfaction that God desires for us. Now let me read a quote to you. Peggy Noonan was a former speechwriter for both President Nixon and President Bush. She's written about 5 or 6 nonfiction bestsellers that have to do with political life or American culture. And in her book, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness, she says this: "We live in a time and a culture where idolatry reigns, by which I don't so much mean worshiping false gods, but rather pseudo-gods or god substitutes, the most important of which is happiness. This is an especially dangerous substitute because happiness is fleeting and unreliable, and therefore a futile, even fatal foundation on which to build one's life. We've lost sight of what those in past centuries understood, that happiness is overrated." Do you believe that? That happiness is overrated? We expend an enormous amount of energy trying to find it, and we just cannot pin it down. She goes on to say, "We've lost sight of one of life's greatest mysteries, that this life is merely the testing ground for the next life. We are the first generations in all of human history that actually expect to find happiness here on earth. And our search for it has caused enormous unhappiness. Why is this? Well, primarily because most people no longer believe in a God who rewards us in the next life and makes amends for any testing or suffering we experience in this life. So we're left with the expectation that life owes us things that we have no right to expect and will never fully achieve, and as a result, we become bitterly disappointed." Now, I think the key to contentment is this concept of finding joy, of experiencing joy, of celebrating joy. And for me, it's being grateful for what God is doing in my life, has done in my life, and will do in my life. And it isn't just the big things. Most people are looking for happiness through big things. I've got to marry the right person, and by the grace of God, I hope you have. I've got to find the right job. I've got to live in the right city. I've got to have the right weather in which to be happy. I've got to, you know, have whatever it is that we think we have to have in order to be happy. But not only can we not control all of those things, but they're fickle and they're undependable. So what I have done is what Martin Luther told me to do about 20 years ago, and that is I try and notice all of the small things that are going on around me in life. I try and observe what is giving me pleasure and happiness and be grateful for those things. Now, I've discovered that gratitude is easy and contentment is hard. You know, I can be really grateful for a whole variety of things, but there's a whole world of difference from that settling into my heart and making me content at the same time that I'm grateful for those things. But let me tell you some of the things that I was thinking about recently that make me happy. The fact that my wife laughs at my jokes, it is a small thing. But thank God I married a woman who has a fractured enough sense of humor that she thinks I'm amusing. My wife is not remotely funny. She couldn't tell a joke to save her life. But she is the greatest audience in the world, and I am so grateful when I hear her laugh. I have a kitchen seat that's like 3 feet away from this big window in my kitchen and a bird bath 3 feet outside of that. And off and on during the year, I can see this bright red cardinal or this yellow goldfinch sitting there. And every time I see one of these things, my heart soars. I think, oh my gosh, these are so beautiful. And they've come to my house to check me out. All the different spectacular colors of iris, you know, this is a flower that lasts about 10 days and then they croak. But oh my goodness, for 10 days they are amazing. Every imaginable color under the rainbow. And there are these giant, gorgeous blooms. And they just keep reproducing, you know, you leave them alone. And unlike so many other things, man, they just get more and more and more of them. I'm so grateful for them. On my back deck sometimes, on the right night, you can see the purple and the red and the blue of an amazing Kansas sunset on the western horizon. And my wife and I rush out and we sit down on our chairs and we just watch it. Listening to the rain on my front porch, I have a fairly large screened-in front porch that's roofed. And when it's pouring rain and flashing lightning, it is amazing to sit there completely out of the rain and just watch this and experience this and hear this and smell this. The other day I was in a store and there were parents with little babies in their carts. They were each maybe about 9 months old. And as they were waiting in line, you could see these babies kind of checking each other out, you know, like, what the heck is that? And it was just astounding watching the various things that their eyes and their mouths and their faces did as they watched each other. The taste of anything that I cook on charcoal in my own grill. Oh my goodness, I love that. I have treasured photographs of my children when they were growing up, as do you. And each one of my children, I have one or two favorite photographs. And just the other day, I was looking at this one of my daughter who's like maybe a year and a half sitting in a kitchen sink getting her bath with one arm on the edge of the sink and her chin like this in a spontaneous pose. I love listening to the climax of Ray Vaughan Williams' Second Symphony in the dark in my living room. When nobody's home, I turn it up really loud and I just cry because it's so beautiful. I love fruit salads, and the more fruit you can put in a fruit salad, the better it is. So whatever that time of year is, when all of the fruit is in season, I have to have at least 10 different kinds of fruit. I have to cut it up exactly the same. Everything has to be the same size. And I can't think of anything I'd rather eat. Getting an unexpected phone call from a friend that I haven't talked to in years. Watching people in the airport, knowing that they're waiting for somebody, not knowing who they're waiting for, and especially if it's a service person, getting off the plane that they haven't seen for a while, and the joy that they feel is tangible for me. Walking through art museums, I've talked to about five people this week who said they'd rather die than be in an art museum. I'd almost rather be in an art museum than anything else, or just looking at beautiful pictures in a book of art that I will never see just makes me so full of joy. Watching my 6'8" son play with his Great Dane puppy, I just can't stop giggling. Seeing my father, who's 89 years of age, able to hear and see, full of youthful energy and enthusiasm for life. It just makes me so happy. And receiving any Father's Day card from my daughter. Yeah, I don't know if any of you who have adult children are blessed by them having a real passion for communicating their affection for you, but you know, somebody could buy me a $500 gift and it wouldn't matter as much to me as the cards I get from my daughter. Now, here's what happens. This practice on my part of doing this does three things, and it will do it for you as well. Number one, it makes us more aware of God's blessing. You know, the problem is we wander through life and we don't pay any attention to what's going on around us except what we're focused on. And by intentionalizing this thing of looking at the small things in life, it makes us far more aware of how many and how vast and how varied our blessings are. The second thing is it allows us to appreciate those things more. Obviously, if we don't notice them or aren't aware of them, we can't appreciate them. But if we stop and pay attention, we begin to appreciate not only the blessings, but we appreciate the blesser as well, not just the gifts, but the giver of the gifts as well. And one of the things that our relationship with God requires is that we recognize what He's doing and we be grateful for it. And the third thing is that it increases our capacity for joy. You know, it's like, you know, lifting weights. Your muscles grow in their capacity. As we lift gratitude up to God, it increases our capacity for joy. I am so grateful that I can hear and see and smell and touch and taste. Now, some people don't have all of their senses, but the vast majority of us have all five of them. Isn't it great that there isn't just one sense, but that there's five? I am so grateful I can read. Can you imagine what life would be like if you couldn't read stuff? I am so grateful that God speaks to us through His Word and that I have my very own copy that I can take with me anywhere and I can open it anytime and God talks to me from it. I'm so grateful that God listens to me when I decide I want to take the time to share with Him. And sometimes I think He's talking back to me. I'm so grateful that I don't have to worry where my next meal is coming from. And I am so grateful that life isn't fair. Because if life was fair, I'd be sitting naked in a ditch by the side of the road wondering where my next meal would be coming from. I am so grateful for electricity. Now, most people are grateful for all the devices that electricity runs, you know, all these cool technological gadgets that we have to have nowadays. I just think electricity is amazing. And I'm kind of old school. I think garage door openers are absolutely unbelievably wonderful. I think electric lights are amazing. I like watching period pieces. I can't imagine what it would be like to have to light candles everywhere I went. Let me tell you what I was thinking last night. Joy comes from accepting the will of God in our lives and relaxing in His unconditional love. Joy comes from recognizing what God has done for us and is doing for us and will do for us. Joy comes from enjoying the salvation that Jesus purchased for us and knowing our most important needs, the eternal ones, are already taken care of. Joy comes from knowing that God will see us through each and every difficult experience or crisis or tragedy in life, which is an astounding concept. Ours isn't a God who lives off somewhere and doesn't care. Ours is a God who is very connected and involved. And joy comes from knowing that we are created to serve God and not vice versa. And knowing that God will use our feeble efforts to expand His kingdom and His work here on earth. Now let me reread our passage for this morning, just this section. Paul says, I've learned to be satisfied with whatever I have and whatever circumstance I find myself. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have more than enough. I have learned this secret so that anywhere I am, at any time, I might be content. Whether I'm full or hungry, whether I have too much or too little, I have the strength to face all conditions by the power that Christ gave me. Now that last verse is verse 13, and this is how you will see it quoted almost all the time. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me. And how do we apply this? Well, any task I face, I can conquer. Anything I want, I can achieve. If I can conceive it, I can achieve it. I can climb the highest mountains because God strengthens me. I can win the greatest battle because God strengthens me. I can be the world's greatest athlete because God strengthens me. And so we take this verse out of context and we make it mean something that neither God nor Paul ever intended it to mean, that just whatever I want to do, God will strengthen me to do it. Here's what the verse actually says. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. And what is this? It's all of the struggling and suffering that Paul is talking about before this, all of the want and need and not having enough. In fact, this is really the image that should go with that verse. I can do all this through him who strengthens me. Paul was in prison. Paul had been beaten. Paul had been stoned. Paul had been shipwrecked. Paul had been robbed. Paul had been attacked. And Paul could do all of this because of the Lord who strengthened him. And when we understand that, then we realize that contentment isn't found in the fulfillment of whatever we desire, and it isn't found in getting rid of all of our desires. It's found in surrendering our desires to the God who wants to fulfill our needs. And in the end, as the words of the song says, it is well with my soul. Whatever my lot, whatever I have to face in life, it is well with my soul. Okay, so Wednesday night at our last WOW, we were listening to something similar to this from the speaker. And as I was sitting there, I was thinking, you know, this is so true. I had went through hell in my personal life in 2005 and in 2009. And if it weren't for the goodness of God, if it weren't for this conviction that God loved me unconditionally despite what was going on around me, that God had taken care of my most important needs on the cross, there wouldn't have been the sense of joy and peace and contentment that I experienced. So I stand up in front of our small group of adults that are here, and I look at everybody out there, and I realize every single person sitting in that room had gone through some personal crisis, and all but two people, I knew what their crisis had been, and it's been since I've been here in Ottawa in 15 years. Significant crises. One of them was the Cunninghams, who lost their son, Will. And they would be the first to tell you that life isn't the pursuit of happiness because it's fleeting and you cannot find it. It's the realization that peace and contentment and joy come from the Lord, and that enables us to deal with difficult circumstances. And good night, what happened to him again this week. So I called Sarah on the phone while they were in the hospital, and she said, God is so good. Our son is alive, and we are so blessed. I'm so glad that God doesn't leave us in a chase for happiness, but God bestows upon us the gift of contentment and joy and peace. I hope that these are the gifts that you have for Christmas in the midst of all of the chaos, in the midst of all of the planning, in the midst of all of the activities. I hope and pray for you that what rises in your hearts is this sense of contentment as to who you are and what God has done for you, this sense of peace and a sense of joy. Will you please join me in prayer? Heavenly Father, we are so grateful for who you are and what you have done for us and what you are currently doing for us and with us and what you promise to do for us in the future. And you are faithful and trustworthy. Father, we are so grateful for the life that you've given us. And while we could pick and choose the details in the midst of all of it, in the midst of good times and difficult times, in the midst of, as Paul says, plenty and want, we experience the blessed gift of joy and the unbelievable gift of peace because we have learned to understand that contentment is a rare thing in our culture. Father, may we nurture contentment and gratitude in ourselves so that we will ever experience peace and joy. In Jesus' name, amen.